Welcome to episode 42 of Digital Outbox. Hello and welcome to another brand new episode. It's Ian doing the hosting, full of the cold. I will try and speak clearly and not sneeze too much because you don't want to catch my germs. Joining me tonight is Henry. Hello, Henry.
Hi, Ian. How are you?
You've just told me,
haven't you? You're doing
miserably. I'm full of the cold.
Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much.
You've been dying to say that since I've came on.
I have indeed.
So I'm probably even more miserable than I usually am.
Oh, well, that always makes for a good podcast.
Well, we need Chris here. We need the anti-Apple man.
We do really, don't we?
Especially we really tonight. And how are you? I shouldn't be so rude.
Oh no, I'm doing well. I'm just delighted to be getting on with the podcast this evening.
the novel thing this week is that we've got video for a change.
Yes, but not for the listeners.
No.
Which is probably just as well.
I could be secretly recording you. Anyway, let's move on to our first story. You're now thinking, what is he really?
I have been told I've got a great face for a podcast, but not a vodcast. So there we go.
No, we really need Shaquille here for the old video podcast with his bod-like features. Our first story, Google's finally shut down Chinese search. So they've not really shut it down. They redirected to Google Hong Kong, and I think China shut it down for them after that. So it just really felt like some more PR from Google without really achieving very much.
It did really, didn't it? I mean, it's been a long time in coming, and we wondered whether they would be they would actually go ahead with the threat or whether they would not bother at all. But no, they've gone ahead and pulled out. So
yes, and they've actually and it's something I actually changed my Gmail password this week, and they added in that little. So I think you've always been able to go in and see where somebody had last logged in from. But they're now highlighting if they believe that there's been some suspicious activity in your account. And I had some suspicious activity.
Did you? I was very disappointed because I tried it and there was absolutely no suspicious activity at all. There was me and there was me and there was me. And that was it. I was like, oh dear, China's not interested in me.
Well, there was me and there was me. And there was no Chinese involvement, but there was a few logins from America, which was a bit... And I started thinking, how could that be? And is it a proxy? And I'm like, no, it can't be a proxy because at work it's all blocked. And I thought, oh, I'll change my password, thanks very much.
Yeah, double quick, I would have thought.
Yeah, well, I just can't think why. And it was over a 2 or 3 month period. There was seemed to be repeated the same IP address in America. So I don't know if it's just some sort of service I've signed up for that was... But I can't think of any that would have done that. So passwords changed.
and what is it now? Oh, sorry. That would be bad. That would be bad for you to tell us over on the
It would be bad. Yeah. But I was going to say I wasn't going to say it, but you just never know. I was going to give you a clue, which is not the best thing to be doing.
That's not good either. Not good either.
No. So, yeah, well done, Google, I think, for getting some more PR. On to more UK-centric. There was a budget last week.
There was a budget last week, wasn't there?
A bit duller.
Yeah, these things are always a bit dull, aren't they? And whichever political affiliation that you have, you always kind of there's always stuff that kind of hits the headlines, and there's always going to be new taxes and things. But this one seemed quite good from a tech point of view.
Well, game devs are now getting a tax break now. When I first read this, I thought, well, that's really good for the gaming industry. And then because probably I follow quite a lot of Apple developers on Twitter, they were starting to argue, well, if my Flickr app happened to have some sort of game in it, does that mean I can get a tax break? But I've now read it's only if the game is morally good. Which is quite rich coming from a group of MPs making some law that they're getting all moralistic about gaming. But seemingly for something like Grand Theft Auto, they wouldn't be happy giving that a tax break.
Right. So how? Yeah. Well, that just
so there's some sounds conditions.
It sounds like there's a bit of a cop out there that they don't have to give it to anybody that they don't really like.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think this is the thing. It's actually only one. If you look at it in detail, it's like one line or one paragraph, and that's all they've said.
Yeah.
So it's a make believe bit of policy, really. The £6 tax for super fast broadband.
Boo.
Indeed. That all just looks a bit stupid as well. Mm-hmm. And I guess the last thing, and it's not budget related at all, but I don't know if it was the same day or just a couple of days before, but the number 10 iPhone app was launched. Which is obviously, if you're a Tory supporter, total Labour PR and nothing to do with number 10 and getting the message out to people at all. So that was it from tech-friendly budget.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things about this budget is it's probably the first one where Twitter and things, there was quite a lot of Twitter activity and things on the budget, and seemed to me to be that the trending topic was more about the extra tax on super strength cider than on anything else. But it's interesting to see how people can kind of interact with these things now online through Twitter and that in a way that has not been the case in the past, and politicians and that can get feedback on straight away, whereas it used to take them a wee while to hear from their constituents about what a terrible these tax rises were.
If you think about if you were sitting in the opposition benches, I know there was pictures of them all with calculators and they were all scribbling away. But if I was in the row behind, I'd make sure they all had either iPhones or BlackBerries and getting the public reaction. What is actually giving people most cause for concern out of that announcement?
Yeah, and of course a lot of the MPs are now on Twitter and they are in the chamber with their iPhones and they are checking up a whole load of these things and finding out what people are. But that doesn't seem to make it directly into the debates and things. But
no,
you do notice though each week that PMQs is Prime Minister's Questions is one of those things that does get a little bit of coverage now, which on Twitter and things, which to me it seems pretty dull and but
well, people... BBC cover it. And I think they're trying to turn it into something, but unfortunately, and I guess it's just a sign of the times, the first 5 minutes are all condolences, you know, for the amount of soldiers that are dying, which isn't the best way of filling in some TV time.
No, let's
have the three or four leaders all stand up and say condolences. I'm all for saying condolences, but I'd rather have a couple of questions in there, thanks very much.
Yeah, definitely.
But they're definitely getting a lot more exposure.
Definitely.
A lot more exposure. Moving on, the Times and the Sunday Times are to charge from June this year. So they're going to introduce a paywall, and quite a high paywall as well. So for a day's access, it will be £1. But surprisingly, only £2 for a week's subscription, which doesn't seem too bad.
I think £2 for a week. I mean, the thing is that you can go out and buy the paper for £1 a day. You could actually buy the print edition.
Yes.
You know, so I think it's interesting to see how this will all pan out. I mean, most people that I know, I do know some people that like the Times and they like the columnists and things, and they would consider paying to read those pundits' comments. But I think for the majority of people, it's like, well, you know, that's a bit of a high price to pay. I think it's very interesting that News International are going down this paywall route, which is in real contrast to the Guardian's route, which is let's try and get as many online people as possible And the more online people reading our content, then we'll see what we can do to kind of monetize that once we've got the people. And you know, they've done really well with their paid for Guardian app, which we've featured before. It's got a good reviews. People seem to like it, and but it's interesting that it's a completely different strategy, really, of trying to get some money out of your news.
Definitely, I even thought the way they were doing it was quite interesting, that there'll be two brand new websites launched in May. So I don't know if this is going to be, I don't know if it's going to be content wise or even presentation or functionality wise, some brand new platform that makes it worthwhile paying the money. At the moment, if it's merely a copy of the website as it is just now, I'm not interested.
No, not
at all. I just don't see where you get the. And I saw there was some people talk about, but it's the engagement, you're getting all the comments, but you're not going to get the comments if people aren't paying for it. It's just, it will die, so you're not get that interaction that you've currently got just now.
Yeah.
So I don't know, one little chink that was quite good, Sun and News of the World are next, and way, sooner they get behind a paywall, and I don't need to see any of their news, the better. So I think that's a great part to the story. It was also, I've thrown in the graphic into our show notes, and it was just on the circulations, which was quite interesting. If you look at the Times, their average circulation is now 500,000. So that's for the print, which is down 17% year on year. And online, their average unique, which I'm never sure if it's an accurate reading, but it's 1.2 million. And it's slightly down as well. It was down 2% year on year. But you look at something like The Guardian, their circulation daily, print-wise, is only just under 300,000, but they're almost 2 million online. So it's obvious where they've been targeting, basically they're where they're trying to get their readers. And percentage-wise, that's over a third increase on year on year, which is really quite impressive.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is that what you might find here is that there are more people online who will look at more than one of these websites, whereas there's probably fewer people that buy more than one newspaper.
Absolutely.
To be honest, I quite like the idea of being able to get the different perspectives online from these different sites and things, which you just don't get when you're shelling for the newspaper.
So if you pay for a certain newspaper, there is an agenda. And there's no, I don't think I've ever read a paper and never thought there was a certain party allegiance or certain stand as an overall, that's what that paper is taking.
Yeah, no, but as you get older, then you choose your newspaper, which can just kind of reinforces your own prejudices, your own views, your own your own view of things, isn't it? So
unless you're a Sun reader and you just flip flop with the masses. God, I hate them. Anyway, so I may as well ask the question: would you pay? I'm in the no camp right now.
At the moment, I'm in the no camp, but I have, I've seen the Wired magazine, the app for that, and it's something new, fresh, different, makes online. This is the thing that really gets me with these guys, that they could do something really smart and really kind of engaging and actually try and win people to want to pay for their content. Rather than and do something fresh and innovative, but instead they're just kind of bemoaning the fact that journalism is going down the tubes and nobody wants to pay for their stuff, which is probably true.
Well, I mean, I looked at and it's interesting you mentioned it. I looked at a couple of the Times articles last week when I put this story in, and there was nothing that stood out as I would pay for that because it was something unique and different. It was no different to what I could pick up from blogs or I could pick up from BBC.
Yeah, or Reuters directly from the or Associated Press. You can actually go directly to the news sources now. And I think that's really where this gets interesting, isn't it? Where if the fact that people don't pay for their news, it means that the likes of the Reuters and the Associated Press don't have enough money to actually go and collect to research the stories in the first place, and
yes.
And that would we would all be the poorer for that if they weren't able to sustain their operations, and so we'll just have to see how it all pans out, I think.
Well, we'll park that story for now, and we will revisit it when we discuss the iPad. And I know I've discussed it for the last 2 weeks, and Chris was like, "Oh, more iPad," but no luck. He's not here. One story that I just picked up today: Best Buy is now coming to the UK, which I'd read last year, and I wasn't too sure if that was going to be a good thing or not. But Best Buy in May will be opening their first UK store in Lakeside. Another 5 planned for the rest of the year, and they're hoping to have 80 stores in the UK over the next 5 years.
Where's Lakeside again?
Is that not down in Surrey?
Yes, it could be. Now, I think this is a bit of a shame, because this is the first year in the summer when I'm not driving down to the continent and won't be able to go past there. So that's a bit of a shame. I'll have to miss the Best Buy there.
Well, there's June for Southampton, so if I'm down in Portsmouth, I'll make be worth popping over. I can't see any other reason for visiting Southampton apart from that's where the airport is. But you never know. There's maybe something there.
But I mean, certainly 80 stores in the UK over the 5 years, they've got a big expansion plan, and certainly it has been a bit of a minor irk of mine that when I do research for like sort of tech gadgets and stuff online, that lots of Best Buy often comes up as having great prices in the States, and you think, oh, if only we could be over there. So maybe they'll be doing their stuff here. That should be good. Good competition.
Well, it would be. I mean, at the moment, if you look in the high street, you've got PC World, and that's it. And in the small independents, there's just nothing. There's no big chains anymore of these type of stores.
No, that's right.
And unfortunately, somebody will maybe say, oh, well, what about Dixon's or what about Curry's? And it's all the same. They're just all the same prices, all the same mentality. Although I will say, Peterborough, at Christmas, their PC World was really well done up. So I think I still think that was some sort of shop trial they were doing. You walked in and it was night and day compared to PC Worlds we've got in Glasgow. And I don't mean there was no scallies trying to rob you. They'd really thought about what they were selling. Apart from the guy that wouldn't sell me a Mac Mini. His loss. My gain. And also I read today Best Buy is in Europe is half owned by Carphone Warehouse.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
So definitely got a big, I don't know if it's reputable, but definitely a big name behind it. Anyway, we have delayed it long enough. iPad.
Oh, iPads. Yeah! Excuse me, I just can't contain my excitement. We've only got one more week to wait until we see some of these things. Well, the Americans do.
I do like how that burst of excitement broke Skype video. I got a still photo of you in mid kind of excitement. That was class. Yes, so iPad is out this Saturday, and unless you're going to fly over and pick one up, you're kind of stuffed if you're in the UK. And I'm not even convinced we're going to get them. I mean, they've said end of April. I'm still not convinced, because there's now, if you pre-order in the States, they're saying that the first one's now 12th of April, which just makes me think they're struggling for stock. I can see UK struggling in that regards. Quite a few apps and stories and magazines all starting to now show their wares. So I think the first one that I'd spotted, Wall Street Journal, are now talking about $17.99 a month. And that's for their iPad application, which again sounded a bit pricey. And you need to see the app and see what it brings. The print version is $29 a month.
The thing is, though, that the Wall Street Journal is different to the News International publications, in that the Wall Street Journal does provide very specific, very business oriented.
To me, it's like the FT.
Content. It is like the Financial Times, and people that are looking for that sort of content are going to pay for it, and so they're really in a different kind of market, really, the users that they're trying to target there, and I think they're on a winner there.
Well, I meant to say that when we were talking about the Times earlier, because the Times is a bit more general. I know it's very well respected and all that good stuff, but FTE was very specific, and they've got a paywall right now, but you're going to have a fairly large sector willing to pay that for the content they provide and the coverage they provide,
definitely,
which is a bit more specialist.
Yep.
Rather than, and this is a, I think this is a problem, a newspaper too general.
Yep.
It's not going to have that. That. So, Wall Street Journal, $18 a month. And I'd put up a little thing at the time, what about Flash? And there's an announcement today from Bright Cove. So they provide the basically the video platform for New York Times and Times Magazine. And they've announced today that if you are one of their partners, you can now use HTML5 video to seamlessly replace Flash content. So they're already saying that, that, I mean, basically, and I don't know if it'll be ready for this Saturday, but the very quickly you'll be able to have an iPhone or iPad specific video content delivery system that if it detects you're an iPad or you're an iPhone, will deliver it in HTML5 video rather than Flash.
Yeah, and that's why the whole Adobe throwing their hands up and saying how terrible it is that Apple's not providing Flash, it is a bit of a non-issue because as these devices take off, then people find other ways of delivering the content. So, you know, if you want to deliver the content, you find a way to use what's required rather than, you know, sticking with what's always been. And that's, you know, that's innovation, and you know, that's what we like to see.
I feel I should come in with a negative comment because Chris isn't here and I've not got one. New York. Because to me, this is what people want. They want to move on to something that's non, you know, it's more of a standard. And I know there's an argument just now about the different video standards and what is a standard and is it open sourced and all that good stuff, but it's better than Flash.
Well, yeah, and actually, I don't think people really care. They just want to watch video on whatever device they've got. So,
yep.
You know, I think ideologically, I mean, this is where I'm kind of going a bit off topic here, but the whole issues of Linux or OS X or Windows or whatever you're using, people are, you know, the guys that the real techie guys really say, oh, you know, you've got to go for the open source stuff, and actually Joe Consumer doesn't care. He just wants his stuff to work, and ideology doesn't really come into it, particularly when you know, it affects the cost of things. So anyway,
no, that was a nice little rant. Magazines are also starting to show their format. So you touched on Wired, and I subscribe to Wired in the UK. I think, better watch what I say here, because I think I'm about to commit to buying an iPad if I don't word this carefully. if I bought an iPad, I think I would swap to the digital subscription rather than the paper.
Yep.
Because I think it just suits the way I use or the way I read the content on there, and I think the having it delivered in a multimedia format is so much better than the kind of the paper format you get now. You know, as long as you could read the same articles, and the articles were there, but instead of having the still photos, I could see video.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so many things that they show about, go online and look at this animation, or go and look at this site, and go and look at it. It can be delivered to me. Plus, I don't have to be tied into delivering the content on the, you know, the first week of every month. You know, as it's there and ready, it could be delivered. And I don't know if they would go for that model, or it'd be interesting to see how that changes. You know, if I pay a yearly subscription, do I get drip fed every week with a couple of new articles? Will it have adverts?
Yeah, so, and I think what's interesting is really how kind of dated web pages and things are beginning to look these days, and you know how cluttered web pages seem to be as well, with the way you kind of navigate through them and all the kind of ads and things that are in there, and it's interesting to see how these digital apps and magazines are getting really very very slick and looking really smart in terms of the way they're delivering the content in a way that's
definitely
really attractive and actually makes you really think about, well, actually I can really consider paying for this.
Yeah, and that's the kind of difference. I mean, I've talked about it before, but that readability app or readability website that I've mentioned before. Yeah. I mean, just for taking content and turning it into something that's readable and then more easily storable for later on, I just use so much now. And I've shown it now to 3 or 4 guys at work, and they're like, that's fantastic. You know, really, really little clever thing. And there's another app that I paid for, Articles. It was an app last week released for Wikipedia. And it just turns Wikipedia content into a really lovely readable format.
Yeah.
Pictures really well presented. And you compare it to the actual Wikipedia site, it's night and day.
Yeah.
You know, and this was, I don't know, £2, and it just makes it a fantastic resource.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. It's just taking the content and making it look great. And and the developers are already developing a version for iPad. Mm. You know, so it's all good. So there was a couple of magazines started. Esquire, they're talking about $299 a month for their iPad version. And interestingly, that's $2 less than the print version. And it won't have adverts.
Mm.
So I don't know if that's an initial thing to get people interested, but
well,
again...
The really interesting thing is, of course, that whatever the cover price is of a magazine, that, we're expecting cover prices of magazines to be whatever they are, but they're paid for, the majority of them paid for, really, through adverts. So the actual cost of producing that nice glossy magazine is a lot more than what you pay. So although it's a lot cheaper to distribute and produce the digital versions, it'll be interesting to see if it will actually cover the costs.
Exactly. Because the journalist costs the same.
Yep.
And, you know, the content costs the same, maybe even more if you're starting to deliver video content.
Yep.
So there's a whole load of things production values might increase,
mm-hmm.
you know, so the cost of actually putting this together, and it's a different skill set. So I don't know how I think you're going to see a few different models over the next, 6 months?
Yes.
And one will probably win out as that's the one that's either, you know, gets more support or makes most money.
Yeah.
Quite an interesting little topic I've added in here. There were some screenshots have now come out about the App Store. Looks like many of the popular titles have added on the titles HD. So you've got Flight Control HD, and I can't remember, there was a couple other games in there. So the HD, you know, indicating that this is obviously the kind of bigger version. And there were some others had, you know, like, you know, Flight Control for iPad. So they used the words for iPad afterwards.
Yep.
I don't know how you feel about this. It seems to be, if you go to the actual, I'll put a link in the show notes, if you look at the actual MacRumors website, a lot of people were really, really disappointed in that, for example, Flight Control, which was a 59p app, or it's a 99 cents app. For the iPad version, they're talking $5. And a few of the other apps, it looks like they've increased their price. And this the comments were going wild on this, saying there's no way we're going to buy these apps. Or not, even if they're slightly better, it doesn't justify 5 times the price. I was quite surprised at that. I think, I've always been surprised at how cheap some of the apps are on the iPhone. I just think it really did, and I know it's really popular, but it really did chase down the value of some software.
Yeah, and it's unsustainable, really, and that's really what they're trying to redress the balance here. The issue, I think, for many of the guys here, what they'll find is that, of course, there's nothing to stop people not buying the HD versions, just buying the iPhone.
Exactly.
And running them at double the resolution.
Yes.
The thing is, actually, they're going to look really rubbish, and that's what a lot of developers have been saying. I've been saying, look, we looked at the screen doubled versions of our apps on the iPad, and really they were pretty rubbish, and they're not really making the most of the opportunities that the iPad kind of presents.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
So if you don't like the $5, then just stick with the screen doubled ordinary versions then.
Exactly. I'm not convinced it's a big issue. I mean, I've got a couple of examples in the show notes. Omni Group they're developing all their main Omni titles into iPad titles. So OmniGraffle is going to be the first one that's available, and that's going to cost $50. But that is a full featured app. And you're not going to get that for like, you know, $2.99. They were never going to sell that product for that lower price. Not when it costs $80 for the, you know, the Mac version. And OmniGraffle looks to be doing almost everything that you can do on a Mac.
Yeah, and let's OmniGraffle is really the Visio for Macs.
Absolutely, it's a superb bit of software.
If folks don't know that app, but that's you know, you can't buy Visio for $50, can you?
No. And that's the thing. It's just, it just doesn't. And I think it'll be interesting just to see what people's reactions are and whether sales are lower. I think there will be, because of, you know, the, it's taken away, I guess, the, somebody doesn't mind paying, you know, 59p for an app, but they might think twice about £5 or £3 or.
And I think, though, that this is really where things are kind of being more skewed towards kind of businesses and things too. You know, if you're a business and you're needing to do that kind of diagramming that OmniGraffle does really, really fantastically well, then you'll be quite happy to spend $50 on a on
exactly.
On
well, I've, I mean, for software on the Mac, and I'm glad to admit this, on the PC I never did this, but on the Mac for some reason I feel I have to buy the software. And I think I'm almost fully legit, especially now that my work let me buy Office for free. I love just saying buy for free. Take that, Bill Gates. Even better, when I bought it, they let me buy the Mac and PC version. Way! Because you're only supposed to be able to buy one.
Results.
Bonus. I've ripped you off twice. The but I just, especially for, I think it's there's a lot more developer community environment in the Mac world. I don't know if it's a smaller environment in the smaller base.
Yeah, it is. It's much smaller.
But you feel, but it feels more personal. You know, when somebody talks about here's a release, it doesn't feel like a company's done a release. It feels like that's these two or three guys that are on Twitter. And I don't know if it's Twitter that's made a difference, and I'm just finding the difference because Twitter took off when I moved to Mac.
I don't think so. I think Mac development's always been that. It's been quite a tight community, and a lot of the guys.
It feels more personal.
Yeah, a lot of the guys know each other and support each other as well. You know, it's you're right. You do feel like you're helping out. Some little guy somewhere, some small business somewhere, and of course, there's a lot of British companies that are producing Mac software as well, which is even better. It's not all money's not all disappearing across the pond.
No, exactly. And just I guess a slightly different example: Instapaper, which I use quite a bit as well. Instapaper Pro. The developers already said that the iPad, iPhone, I think they're called Universal. It's the same app basically. He showed some screenshots for the iPad. It looks amazing. It just looks like what a killer app that's going to be.
I saw that as well. I thought that looked really good.
When I see that, that's what tempts me more. It's the software that's tempting me more than the actual hardware.
Yeah.
It's the what I'm going to be end up doing. I'm sure when digital comics start to appear, I'm going to head into town and just buy something.
Well, yeah. Well, do you know that is the thing, and you know, everyone's saying that the iPad's going to fail. We've had tablets for years and years, and nobody's really gone for them. And I did see a screenshot of one of the French company that creates these. But they've had these things for years, but of course, because you're just running XP on them or whatever, you're left with a bundle of Windows over the thing, and you're trying it just doesn't work. What you've got with the iPad is this fusion of hardware and software, which is what Apple does brilliantly, and that's what that's what was so brilliant about the iPod. You know, I mean, there was great MP3 players before that, but when you saw what Apple had done with the software and the hardware together, it's just great, and that's.
So. I feel I need to apologize for anybody who doesn't like Apple, because we've just become loved up over this. but I've got to be honest. When I use the products, I get, you know, just for me, just they just work so well. I mean, there was a video last week, that 17-month-old baby using the iPhone, and I know there was a bit of coaching, but tell me, it was using the iPhone better than I could sometimes. Just some of the way the kid was flicking through the screens. You're not going to get somebody with a Windows 7 touchpad doing that.
No, but maybe with the Windows Mobile Phone 7 Series, Well, whatever it's called. Maybe they could. Maybe they could.
Yeah. The Foursquare app screenshots last week looked really nice for that. Really nice. I think that's going to be a really good product. I'm not saying it would switch, but I think when Chris buys it and does the review for us, I think it'll be a really good product.
He might turn us all.
Hey, let's not go there. Couple other things. If you're still undecided, the worst thing about the video is I can see you laughing. It's just giving me the giggles. The guided tour videos just came out tonight as well. So if you're still a bit undecided and you think, well, what's this all about? Go and have a look at that. And it's the little usability things. It's pop-up menus and all that kind of good stuff that's there now. I just think there's going to be so many apps developed that are going to take advantage of this. Reader 2 came out for the iPhone now, and it's what a great update for Google Reader. And I just think, imagine that on the iPad with that really great front end and all the content. It's like, please make it. Please make it so. I think I've got a list of apps, and if they all got delivered, I would just go and buy an iPad.
Well, anyway, there we go.
And a couple other kind of bits, and I'm not sure they're relevant, but I'm going to throw them in anyway. 10.6.3 came out today for the Mac. I don't know if that's coincidental with iPads coming out this week as well, because it seemed to be ready for quite a while. And there's some talk of iTunes 9.1, which I guess will have to come out to support iPad. I guess there'll be some sort of iTunes will come out.
There'll have to be something, yep, definitely.
So it looks like a week of updates and a week of us looking enviously at people in America with their new toys.
Yes, although I did see some of these sites that were allowing you to order in the States. There's a few of these sites now, kind of drop ship kind of sites, where they will you give them your credit. You use your credit card to buy something in the States and have it shipped to a warehouse in the States, and they will ship it over here. And then, you know, there are a number of sites which only allow US credit cards. So for those sites, for 10% of the purchase price, they will use their credit card, have it shipped to their warehouse, and then ship it over here. So so it's quite expensive, but if you really need something from the States, and some people are saying that they really need an iPad...
Yes.
then so there will be people that can, you know, you can use those services and sign up and things. So it's
I do have a friend visiting Florida in June. Not that I'm forward thinking this at all. But Lewis, I might be in touch. Moving on, still more iPhone appy stories. So sorry, listeners. Chris did say earlier on when I said it was going to be a bunch of Apple fanboys tonight, he said, pity the listener. So that's Chris's only contribution to tonight's episode, pity the listener. I'm hacked off with this next story. BBC iPhone app's been delayed.
Yeah, it has been delayed. And really, it's been delayed because people in the industry said they think it abuses the BBC's dominant position in news. So this is the newspapers, the News International and that. They're getting in and... Murdoch and that, they're getting in and they're saying, we're going to start paying, so we think you shouldn't release a free app. Like,
sod off. I'm annoyed. I know there's people saying they're disappointed as well, because it's all things developed into iPhone, so it was like the number 10 apps out and it's only for iPhone. And it's like, well, tough. If you're going to develop for a mobile platform right now, there is only one platform.
Yes.
You develop for iPhone, and then next in line will be Android. And then next in line, you'll think about some BlackBerry nonsense.
And if you're really wanting both at the same time, you use something like the Appcelerator from the
or you make your website, you know, good enough to work in a whole of the mobile platforms, which isn't always easy.
No, but that's what you do. You're right.
Yeah. So I'm a bit hacked off with this because BBC just feels like it's taking so long. I wish they'd just announced this and said it's going to be released tomorrow.
Yeah, because they announced it and it looked really good and we thought, oh, that'll be great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And now they're saying, well, maybe we'll not do it at all, actually.
Yes. So, hey-ho. Gifting iPhone apps. So you can now gift an iPhone app.
I've been waiting for this for a long time, actually. I must admit, I'm quite pleased this is happening, where you can gift iPhone apps to... to other people. Although there are some restrictions, is that right?
Oh, I don't know, is there?
It's only to people in the same country?
Oh, right, yeah. You mean the stuff that I put in the show notes? I'm not quite with it, sorry. Yeah, so yeah, you need to be in the same country, yeah, yeah. But that's the same as music. So the restriction on apps is no different to the restriction on music.
Right, okay.
And I did actually use this. So I gifted Shaquille, because it was him that tweeted up saying you can now gift. So I gifted him Cannibal, because he refuses to buy it because he says it's nasty. And it's just a great game.
It is a good game. It is great.
So I gifted it, and I've no idea if he ever got it. If he'd joined us tonight, instead of stubbornly saying I'm really busy, then he would be able to tell us. But alas.
Alas. Maybe we'll get an update in the... Maybe we get a tweet or something and an update in the show notes.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
And this is from Chris. So I need to... I don't know if I need to speak with a kind of squeaky voice and be all negative now. Hey! Will iPhone have a night at the opera?
Yes! Right. Yes!
And I think he spent a long time thinking about that title. Not that he's a musical fan or anything. So, Opera have submitted their browser for approval. And I guess what's quite interesting is they demoed this a month ago, then demoed it a week ago, and then said, we're putting it in the App Store, and also put up a counter on their website about how many days it's going to take, which is just like, get a grip. Seemingly it's very fast, because it's going through all their proxy, and it's delivering an image rather than delivering a whole load of JavaScript calls. So
yes, it's all completely basically they do all the their servers do all the calls and get all the stuff, and I think some people might be a bit concerned about all the information that that Opera will be able to
mine
of your browsing habits and the sites and things that you've visited. But you know, if you're not too bothered about that, it certainly is going to be an awful lot faster. And I personally think that may well be a way that they're able to kind of get round the duplication of core functionality restriction that there is on iPhone apps, that they say, actually, this is actually doing something that's a bit different to what Safari does, because really we're already going and getting all the stuff that you've requested and then delivering it back to the phone. So, but I mean, that's absolutely the way Opera Mini works on the other mobile platforms. So, and I don't really see... I think it's true that Apple, if they really wanted to, could use that duplication of core functionality excuse for banning it if they wanted to. I think it's probably going to take a while. I'll probably have to get Steve Jobs involved, and he's going to have to decide whether he wants a competitor of a browser on the iPhone or not. But there are other kind of browsing apps in there, so as we've talked about before. So be interesting to see what happens.
Yes. And I, to be honest, I'm not really fussed. If Safari was a bad browser, I think I'd be more concerned. But at the moment, it works, and I've never had an issue. No, it's not like if I'm sitting using IE and I think, oh, I wish I had a different choice, or I'm using Firefox and I want a different choice. It what I've got generally just works for me.
Yeah.
Let's move on to some gaming stories. This one came out of the blue. I was quite surprised by this. Nintendo 3DS.
So this is bizarre. I always found this really quite bizarre, this story when I read this week.
And it's really odd, because they've announced basically a new Nintendo DS, but it's going to be in 3D.
A 3D Nintendo.
A 3D Nintendo DS.
Wow.
But without the need for glasses. And the bit that's really odd for me is that they've said, so they've put the press release out last week. I've got to be honest, see, if this came out on April 1st, I would have really said they're at it. They put the press release out last week, which seems really odd time to do it. They've said it's going to be out between now and March next year. So well done. But then it's the kind of stats behind it make it really quite interesting. So it's going to have some sort of 3D, won't require glasses. They've talked about 720p screens as well. Talked about accelerometers for tilt controls. Possible 3G chips. Now, if you were about to buy a DS and you saw that getting talked about, you wouldn't buy it, especially the new DSi that came out, which was bigger and a lot of people were saying were really good.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't go and buy that now with that getting talked about. The what seems to be, there seems to be more rumour, and E3 is going to show us more. I can't remember if E3's moved back to May or whether it's in June, so we're not far away from finding out more. The rumour seemed to be that the 3D, they're talking about having a camera. And there's a video demo up of a game that already does this in Japan. And the camera tracks your eyes. So as you move, it changes the screen depth. So it gives you this impression of 3D. And when you watch the video, I've not put the video, I don't think, into the show notes, but I will add it in when I publish the podcast. It was actually pretty convincing. But I don't know how convincing it will be for all games. For this particular game, it worked really well. So that's a Nintendo 3DS, which was just...
Yeah, I think it is fair to say, isn't it, that they already have these kind of 3D screens as Sharp, or somebody's produced these 3D screens for something else. So it's not like they're having to completely develop these the 3D no. screens from scratch. So, but it is all the other stuff, because I think if they were trying to do that from scratch, that would be just crazy to try and get that done on the timescales. Crazy talk! Crazy talk.
So I feel they've put this out and they're going to have 2 months of great hype and then we're going to go, ugh. I just can't see this being anything but ugh. But
yeah, and it's interesting how that'll go. I mean, certainly in the kind of 6 to 11-year-old bracket, the Nintendo DS or DSi is the you know, just about every child at school has one. So it'll be interesting to see how they can push this a bit further, because I think they're really needing to do something.
Yeah, well, I know a 69-year-old that really likes her Nintendo DS as well, so... Used to be mine. No more. In fact, the iPhone's going the same way. It's no longer mine for gaming. Microsoft Game Room was launched this week. I'm not convinced about this either. So this is you download the game room and you can design your own arcade rooms. You can place arcade cabinets. And there's going to be, over time, thousands of these games. And it's basically MAME, but with a cost attached to it. That's all it is. MAME with a sexy front end and a cost attached to it. And most of the games, when there was Centipede was there, there's only 30 at the moment, Centipede was there. The one that did catch my eye was Tempest. I was like, ooh.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah. And it's fairly cheap. So it's almost like iPhone app prices. It's 260 points, which works out, I think, about £2 for one of these games. Or you can pay just under double, 500, and you get it on the PC as well as the Xbox. Friends can visit your arcade. You can. There's a time warp facility, so if you mess up, you can rewind the back.
Oh, dear.
But it just felt like a gimmicky. It was a cross between Sony Home, which, if you've heard me babbling on, I absolutely hate, and MAME. And I'd rather have MAME and just download the ROMs I want.
Yeah.
So that was Microsoft Game Room, which was a bit underwhelming. And our final story. Which is a bit of an odd one. There's an update coming out this week for the PS3, and the only reason I've added this in is it's just like, why now? When the fat PS3 came out, the original PS3, they allowed you to install another OS. Basically, you could put Linux on and you could run Linux on your PS3, which was always a bit of an oddball. But the whole PS3, when you look back at it, it's just been a bit of an oddball. Let's just throw everything in and we'll make the best console in the world ever. And there's now the slim PS3s that came out didn't support this option, and there's going to be a firmware update on April the 1st. Again, great timing. Why not the day before or the day after? But April the 1st. And this will remove the option to install another OS, seemingly due to security reasons. But don't worry, it's optional. But if you don't install it, you can potentially lock yourself out of the PlayStation network, preventing DRM-encumbered videos stored in the media server, for viewing any Blu-ray discs, or PS3 games that require that firmware. So basically, your PS3 becomes unusable unless you install this. You really want to run Linux on your PS3, which is a very small percentage of people.
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine that, at the time when this was really particularly popular, well, I don't even know about the PS3. It was just, you really got to be pretty hardcore to want to put on Linux on these things. You've done it!
Oh. Just as a test.
Yeah. Now, but let me, but tell me, can you still play games and things if you do that?
Yeah. But it's one of these things, you did it and you were like, very good. You know, it used up some hard drive space and you thought, sod that, I'll delete it. So, I think for some people it was probably a decent option, but it never really did very much for me.
But you could, I suppose then you could use it like a computer though, couldn't you?
Oh yeah, because it had Bluetooth, you could, keyboard, mouse. I mean, it was I guess it's just somebody's idea that they've got enough power there to run it as a PC, so why not?
Yeah, and actually that makes a lot of sense. But could you run Ubuntu or anything on it?
There were specific versions, and I don't know if it got any better. When the PS3 first came out, there were specific versions you could download and install, and it had all the proper driver support. Because it's the usual way, everybody keeps on saying Linux is dead easy unless you've got some odd bit of hardware. And then it was just like, oh, it was just pain and horrible, you know. Any time I've tried it, it's still the same. You still get bogged down in some bizarre, crappy, beardy, weirdy, you know, terminal window that all people get, oh, don't worry, this will replace Windows one day. No, it won't. Muppet. Yes, it's free. Yeah, you can tell. It's, I don't know. It's one of these odd things. Why now? And why optional? Just make it mandatory and just stop kidding everybody on.
I think it's a shame that they're doing that, though.
I'm sure there's three people crying right now.
Well, I'm one of them, and I don't even have a PS3.
And that says it all. And that wraps up our news this week. We'll go on to some two very Mac-focused picks. And if Chris was here, it would have been... Well, I was going to say he would have had a non-Mac pick, but his picks have been rubbish the last few weeks. In fact, I'm sure the only reason he was in the M25 tonight was just to avoid making a pick.
Well, he usually takes one of those anyway, so it might have been a Mac. It might have been a Mac pick anyway.
Exactly. I'll just take playing with friends because it's mine. I'll go first because mine's just terrible. I just had to throw this in because as soon as I installed it, it did what it said. It made me smile. Auto Smiley. So this was, I think it was somebody's student project. I really should have made sure I knew what I was talking about before I opened my mouth.
But particularly once you've slagged off another member of the podcasting team for their poor picks.
Exactly. Auto Smiley is it's just a little application. It was done as a little test, I think. Or part of a thesis. I'm sure I remember seeing it elsewhere. The website doesn't see it. It says it's coming from Free Art and Technology. You download it and you run it and you just get a little video displaying. And if you smile, it inserts a smiley into whatever the front window is focused on. And it's just great that you could be sitting there and somebody says something on Twitter and you smile and it puts a smiley in. I just think it's great. And it's the little things. You know, it's the little things. So that's purely it. Probably of no use to man or beast. But it makes me smile.
And is there a cost to this app?
No, it's free.
A free app.
And also, the source code's there as well. You know, so you can see how the guys developed it. Maybe you could make it frown, you know, when you frown. Maybe there's more to this than meets the eye. And it also tells you it's sending a smiley when it does it. You know, so it's quite informative as well.
Oh, dear, dear,
and
dear.
And that's my pick.
Oh, that's
Henry,
a great
what's
pick.
Yours this week?
Well, my pick is something we've alluded to before.
fact. But hey.
we've mentioned the developer before. But we've not actually mentioned this. Had this as a pick. I installed this app. It's called Scrivener, and it's basically for any kind of writing that you're doing, any kind of reports or maybe novels or anything that you're doing like that. And if you're the kind of person that writes, that doesn't write things, doesn't kind of batter everything out all at once, but you know, goes away and does little bits of research and does a little bit of this section and then a little bit of another section and a little bit of another, you know, you maybe done a bit of an outline and then you're trying to fill the different things in, but maybe not in order. It is just brilliant, absolutely fantastic for working on your writing. Now, it doesn't replace the likes of Microsoft Word or some of the professional screenwriting apps out there, but it's brilliant for getting like a first draft ready, and then you can take it into Word or anything else and kind of reformat it if you like, and make it look really nice and pretty, and then take it from there. But it is designed by a writer. And it just takes that whole workflow of how you actually do reports or your writing and things, and is so focused on the workflow that goes along with that, that it's just absolutely genius. And it's got loads of commendations and testimonials from all sorts of people who are you know, screenwriters for Doctor Who and the great and the good, who've used this, and it works for them the way that they like to write. It's $40, but sometimes there are some discounts and things on that as well. The thing I also really like about this is obviously it's a small company. There's just a few guys working on this, one main developer and one or two others, I think. They have a very generous licensing agreement in that if you buy the license for Scrivener, it is basically every Mac that you have in your household is able to use this. So usually a household license comes with like for five users or something, just five PCs. This, as long as they're all your family, they're all in the same location, you can have as many as you like. So it's a pretty generous license that goes along with it. And really, I'm, you know, it's worth a lot more than $40 in terms of the productivity that gives you. If ever you're trying to write anything, it'll do all sorts of things for helping you. If you're writing novels or things, you can, you know, pull the things together which are just the sections of your story which involve a particular character, for instance, or, you know, particular plot things. You can put different keywords and things together with things. You can then rearrange different parts of the story. So say you decided that your story, you've written it, but actually you want to then write it in flashback. It's much easier to take bits and pieces and shuffle them around and split things up and storyboard and outline and things like that, and use keywords. And it's even got a little kind of a full screen editing mode. A lot of writers like to have pretty much a blank screen in front of them and all you see is the text that you're writing. So it's got a little bit of that in there, and a huge number of kind of export options and things as well, and things. Absolutely fantastic. And you know, it's almost one of those apps where you think, because this isn't on Windows, you know, if you're a writer, you would seriously consider buying a Mac just so that you could run Scrivener on it. In fact, there are some testimonials to that effect. So, absolutely brilliant app. And if you're a writer or have to do any kind of writing, go and get Scrivener.
Even better now, it's a digital outbox seal of approval. I'm not a writer. If you read any of my blog posts, that becomes fairly obvious. But I know from other people on Twitter that they just love it.
Yeah, it's great.
Absolutely.
I mean,
love it.
It's great, even for kind of, you know, kind of if you keep a journal or things like that. It's great for that kind of thing too. Just any kind of writing and stuff, just the outlining and stuff and overviews, just brilliant. So yeah, can't recommend it highly enough.
That's a really good pick. And the only reason we're talking about it, and I think it was when we were doing the iPad announcement or launch, when we covered it in quite a lot of detail, it was a Scrivener developer. It was just everybody straight away said, fantastic, Scrivener for iPad would make me buy an iPad. But you just can't justify the, I think it's just him and one other person, they just can't make the money back from it because it's such a specialised app.
That's right.
Which is, I guess it's just one of the tough decisions he's got to make. But no, great pick. And that's us for the week. If you want to visit us on the website, we'd love to get some comments, especially for those anti-Apple people that are probably switched off. But hey, that's why I put chapters in, so use them. And it's not just for pretty pics, Chris. The website is digitaloutbox.com, and we're on Twitter as digitaloutbox. You can email us at info@digitaloutbox.com and send us a review. In fact, send us your pick. The one listener that we've got, send us your pick and we'll include it in the next show. Do it over Skype. So send us it via, what are we? Oh yeah, Digital Outbox. I'm really with it tonight.
Blame the virus, Ian. Blame the virus.
I already have. I'm more blaming it in your video. I've been... The best thing is I have actually recorded it. ScreenFlow has been running all this time.
Oh, dear.
I might just put up some screenshot or two. Blog, Mr. Henry, where can we find you?
I'm at talkrhubarb.com/WordPress and talkrhubarb on Twitter. That's me.
Fantastic. I am at END.net and my Twitter account is Shweepa and not much content, although I am about to pull the trigger on a new camera. So no doubt there'll be a whole load of kind of, I don't know, I was going to say pointless, but I wouldn't be, no, well, maybe it is. But there'll be a whole load of stuff about my new camera.
And Flickr links, I hope.
And Flickr links to hopefully some nice HD video. I have a whole load of things that I want to go and do. Whether I go and do them or not, it's a totally different matter.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Indeed. So, thanks for listening. No doubt next week will be all about iPad apps.
Woohoo!
But you never know. But thanks for listening. Join us again soon. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And that's us. Fantastic.
Super.
See, for just the two of us, we did rattle on quite a bit.
Oh, I know. As we get started. I don't know.
From my neck, that was an hour.
It wasn't, I know. Look at it, it's an hour.
From my neck. Oh. No fluff in there either.